Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, August 1st, 2025. I'm Nick Seabrook. Rabble shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. Ontario Premier Doug Ford has a track record of taking from the public to give to private interests. Nowhere is this more evident than his government's approach to environmental conservation. Time and again, Doug Ford has removed public land to give to private developers, all in the name of supposedly strengthening the provincial economy and building houses. In recent years, parks and other green spaces have been sold off for the creation of spas, highways, and some housing, all while destroying valuable habitats and ecosystems. Today on Rabble Radio, I speak with Tim Gray, the Executive Director of Environmental Defense, about the recent announcement that 60% of the provincially owned Wasaga Beach will be handed over to private developers. Here's my interview with Tim Gray. Take a listen. And I'm here speaking with Tim Gray, the Executive Director of Environmental Defense. Tim, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me.
To start off, for our listeners who might not be familiar, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about environmental defense and what it does?
Yeah, well, I'm the executive director of environmental defense. My background is that I'm a biologist and then started working a lot more in environmental policy and all the things that come with it. So yeah, and I actually related to this story is that I actually grew up on another beach, very close on Lake Huron, on Sable Beach. So I'm kind of familiar with the beaches on Georgian Bay and Lake Huron, which will kind of be useful when we get talking about it later. Environmental defense, we work on public policy to protect the environment across Canada. We have federal programs and provincial programs, provincially here in Ontario and in Alberta. Our biggest program is climate change, but we also have a really significant livable communities program that focuses on the Greater Golden Horseshoe and development and environmental protection in that area. We also work on toxic chemicals, trying to keep them out of our environment, plastics, and water. So we're busy, and our job is to really inform the public on how to best engage with their communities and their political leaders to ensure the environment is protected across the country.
Absolutely. Now, as you mentioned, we're here to talk today a little bit about one of Ontario's most beloved and famous beaches, Wasaga Beach. Over the past couple of months, the Doug Ford government has announced some significant changes that will be happening to this public space. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on at Wasaga Beach?
Yeah, this was a bit of a surprise, I think, for everyone. But just before the long weekend in July, before the Canada Day weekend, the province announced that they were going to sell off about 60% of the beachfront in Wasaga Beach Provincial Park. And at the same time, they were going to bring in changes to the Provincial Parks and Conservation Reserves Act overall. They did not specify what those changes would be, which has caused us concern because they do not need changes to the act in order to remove land. They just need to follow the process in the act. So we're very alarmed that they're planning on making broader changes to the act to make selling off of land in provincial parks more possible. With Wasaga, it's the removal of lands from a park, period, is something to be really concerned about, because we only have about 12% of land in the province permanently protected in provincial parks and conservation reserves. And these areas are meant to be managed for ecological integrity for the people of Ontario in perpetuity. They're not just real estate holdings to be sold off whenever it's convenient. And then these lands themselves, the province was very clear that they're selling them off to support a big tourism development in Wasaga. And the lands themselves, being beachfront lands and riverside areas and areas of natural and scientific interest, are habitat to both rare and endangered species. And given the province has just repealed the Endangered Species Act, And now they want to remove these lands from the park where they've been, the priority has been ecologically focused management because they're in a park. We're very concerned that those values will be compromised, either through direct development, i.e. buildings being built on top of some of these lands, or them being disturbed in ways that makes it impossible for species like the piping plover, the shorebird that's very rare that lives there, to persist. So it's both a practical issue in terms of like what's going to survive there, but it's also a principal issue, is that once land is permanently protected at a provincial park, it's meant to stay that way and not be sold off.
Yes, and you mentioned that this seems to be very much focused on tourism and development, and of course, the Ford government has been asked about this. They claim that any endangered species or ecologically sensitive parts of the environment will remain protected. But one thing that I did note in the province's press release announcing these changes is that one part of the beach that is staying in the public sphere, the Nancy Island Historic Site, was being transferred from the Ministry of Environment and Conservation to the Ministry of Tourism and Economic Development. It kind of really feels that that signal is about this is for developing and growing the economy, and not for the protection of the environment isn't a top priority, seems to be the message that they're sending.
Absolutely. The it's kind of an appalling to hear the province say that they are confident that the values will be protected, because provincial parks have a mandate to protect values, so a legal mandate. So removing the lands from the control of the province to the town, and then potentially to a third party developer, means that they will no longer be in control of that. And the Endangered Species Act, which the province had for 2 decades, that requires the protection of endangered species habitat, has just been repealed. So I'm not exactly sure how they are confident that values that are sensitive will be protected when they are selling the very land that needs to be protected, and they've repealed the legislation that would require a third party to protect those values.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about some of those at-risk species are there. You mentioned the piping plover, which is a shorebird. Why is it important that this bird be protected? What sort of risks is the bird facing? And what are some of the other parts of this unique space that are at risk if they go into the hands of developers?
Yeah, so the piping plover is a shorebird. You've probably seen the pictures of a little tiny guy who likes to hop down the beach. And they were actually at one point completely extirpated from Ontario. And through the work of a lot of folks, including people in Ontario parks, they've been slowly recovering. The first ones that came back to Ontario, I believe, were in 2007. What they require is beach areas kind of up from the main place where the water hits, but kind of up towards the dunes, and that kind of flat area between that gets waves on it and where people usually swim, and the dunes themselves. And what happens is during the winter, bits of wood and pieces of grass and things end up washing up in that area. And it makes kind of an interesting habitat that provides them with areas to nest that are hidden, and their eggs and their chicks are then hidden from predators, and it makes it harder for things like raccoons or seagulls or other things to find them. So that's where they like to nest. So if you bulldoze that area, rake that area, change it during the nesting season, you're going to clearly kill the actual eggs. You're going to kill them. But anytime during the year, if all that stuff is removed and not allowed to evolve naturally, is that habitat isn't going to exist. And so those birds are not going to do well. So it's really important to maintain the areas that they have chosen to nest in, because they identify their own places where they want to nest, that be left alone and left natural. So those are the birds. And then we have a whole variety of dune grasses, flowers, etc., that grow in the dunes that are in behind this beach area where the piping plovers are. And those species are what's called Atlantic coastal plain species. And so these are species that you would more normally associate with being on the East Coast, right along where there are big dunes on the ocean. And the Great Lakes are kind of unique that way, that the lakes are so big that they are able to form dunes that look a lot like the ocean, but freshwater ocean. So we have all these rare plants there. And then the dunes themselves have really important function in actually blocking some of those big storms we get, especially in the fall and in the winter, but especially before the ice forms. You can kind of think of November gales, December gales blowing down Georgian Bay. Those dunes really do protect the houses and the community in behind them by blocking all of that. So they provide a structural benefit as well as providing habitat for these rare species and birds.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the province is considering changes to the Provincial Parks and Conservation Reserves Act. Like you'd said, they have not specified what those changes would be, but why is the province touching that act so concerning, especially in the context of the changes that you'd mentioned they made to the Endangered Species Act?
Yes, it's very concerning because they have a track record of attacking environmental legislation. And there's no need. I mean, this proposal to remove land from Busega is very problematic, but they could do it under the existing rules. Any proposal to remove more than 1% of a park, a provincial park, they are required to do a report submitted to the legislature and have a vote of the legislature on the new park boundaries. So it's clearly codified that it's possible. So the only reason you need to change the legislation, if you're thinking about either removing that requirement and therefore being able to remove land from other parks that greatly exceed 1%, or you're planning other changes to the act. Now, those could be changes that are going to make the act stronger. It's just that with the track record of this government, we're very concerned that in fact it's going to make it weaker and make it easier to do things like very quietly and without public notice, give away big chunks of our protected area system to private individuals.
And for this issue of Wasaga Beach, what are some of the ways, what are the some of the things that Environmental Defense is working on to push back against this decision?
Yeah, the key here is that this proposal must come to the legislature. The existing law requires it to do so. And of course, if they're planning on changing that requirement, that too has to come to the legislature. The legislature is not coming back, I think, until October 20th, around there. So there's time for people to learn about this issue, and there's time for people to talk to their MPPs. Both government MPPs, they really need to understand how their constituents feel about this proposal. And opposition MPPs need to understand how their constituents feel about this proposal so they can bring this up in the legislature and in the committee hearings that will be required to review this legislation. So it does give us a little bit of time, and the fact there is a legislative process helps in that it formalizes what needs to be done here and gives us a chance to really show the provincial government that this is a wildly unpopular proposal. And that the public really does not want them to go ahead with it.
Now, to your knowledge, was there very much consultation done before this decision was made? For example, I know that this land is the traditional territory, the Mississauga of the Credits, the Wendat, the Haudenosaunee, and the Assiniboine. Do you know if there was even any consultation with the First Nations in the area?
Not that I'm aware of, and there was no public consultation other than this posting that occurred on 5 o'clock on the Friday before the Canada Day long weekend.
Yeah, very interesting. And as you had been talking, this is not exactly the first time that the Ford government has done something like this. The Ford government is now in its third term. Last term, a major scandal that rocked the government was, of course, the decision to remove other private public lands from the green belts and to hand those over to private developers. We've seen this already happen in Toronto with Ontario Place, once a very popular public park in the downtown on the waterfront, being given over to a development of a spa. Just what are your thoughts on the province making these decisions, and what do you think needs to be done to bring more attention to the need to defend the environment and our ecological public spaces?
Yeah, this is a pattern. The current provincial government does have a propensity to, give away public goods to private development and also to roll back environmental protections that are identified by anyone in the development industry as being something they don't like. There's very little analysis behind any of this. I really do feel that. The premier talks to people that he sees as his friends, as he would describe them. And if any of them who are very close to the government, point out something legislatively they don't like, then I think he just turns around and says, well, let's get rid of it then. I think it's pretty much that simple. I mean, he's himself has been kind of clear on how he sees environmental protection He dismisses the impacts of the proposed Highway 413, for example, by saying it's just, people like obsessing about a couple of grasshoppers, because of the impacts that it's going to have of the route that they've chosen through very high quality conservation land. So I think he just doesn't seem to value protection of the environment. He repealed the Ontario's Climate Action Plan. He's campaigned vigorously against carbon pricing. He's changing our electricity system to be more dependent on gas plants and frustrating the ability to build renewable energy, very much aligned with incumbent fossil fuel interests. So has a very strongly anti-environmental record and really does seem to believe that progress is tied to wrecking the environment, which is a very antiquated view of what like a modern society would consider its path to success. So it's very unfortunate, it's very misinformed, and ultimately very destructive and will be bad for the people of Ontario.
Now, some of those pieces of legislation that Doug Ford has put in place to make development easier, things like his changes to ministerial zoning orders, Bill 5 that happened earlier this year was a big one that allowed Doug Ford to name certain areas of the province as zones of economic interest, and basically all bets are off in these zones. You don't have to follow certain environmental regulations or labor laws. H how does legislation like this make your work more difficult?
Yeah, it is very difficult in Ontario. But that's the least of the issue. The issue is that real values are being destroyed by these draconian approaches to environmental protection. The argument the province was making around rolling back planning rules, attacking conservation authorities, getting rid of wetland protection, sacking regional planning, encouraging sprawl, all of that was that it was going to lead to a massive housing boom and that was going to solve the housing affordability crisis. Well, Ontario now leads the country in having the least number of houses being built. Clearly, the structural problems in the housing industry had absolutely nothing to do with protecting the environment, but it was a convenient way to use a real crisis, the housing affordability crisis, to remove all requirements on big industrialized landowners to protect any values in areas where they're developing them. So it was a very much a gift to developers at the cost to the province with no benefit in terms of actually getting housing built. So much of this is in that vein. These attacks are to favor a very few, very well-connected, very wealthy people with close ties to the provincial government, but at great expense to the public.
Now, on your website, you list quite a few different areas in Ontario that you're focused on in terms of pushing back, especially against the Ford government. Obviously, when there's so many metaphorical fires to tackle, what are some of your top priorities? We talked about Wasaga Beach, but I was wondering if there's anything else high on your radar.
Yeah, the Wasaga Beach is one, both because of the site, of course, but because of the broader attack on the park system that seems to be embedded there. Highway 413, it's a very unnecessary, expensive, and destructive highway that has clear alternatives to it. So that's been a focus of ours. More broadly, it's sprawl and really trying to get the province and the federal government and the cities to work together to build housing, both market and non-market, deeply affordable housing inside of our existing cities, and to change the rules that are constraining that so we can actually build more housing that is family-sized units inside of our cities where there's transit, where there's services, where it's cheaper for people to live, and stop this sprawl that's gobbling up our farmland and destroying our natural areas and our rivers and streams and causing climate change, as well as gridlock that makes people's lives miserable when they have to get back and forth between these areas. So that's a big focus for us. And then on the electricity and the energy system, really trying to work with whoever we can, cities, electrical distributors, federal government, to really recognize that the cheapest form of electricity now is both solar and wind and batteries. and to try and change the trajectory here in Ontario of massively increasing the pollution by going heavily towards gas plants and putting a massive cost on consumers by going heavily towards nuclear, which is a very, very expensive way of producing electricity. So both in that space, that's a priority for us. And then really trying to encourage the adoption of technologies that will reduce pollution and make people's lives more affordable, like electric vehicles, like better public transit, like electrification of transit, et cetera. So those are big priorities in the energy and climate space. And then on water, we've been really focusing on trying to ensure that Lake Erie and the rest of the Great Lakes are not receiving as much pollution as they currently do, especially from farming. So working with the farming community, working with land use planners to try and reduce the pressure on pollution on the Great Lakes.
Now, for our listeners who are learning about these issues, learning about what's going on with Saugerties Beach, and they want to be part of the solution and they want to get involved, what's some of the best ways that they can do that?
Best thing is to check out what we're doing with all of these programs at environmentaldefense.ca. Our website is pretty comprehensive. We try and keep it up to date. You can also, of course, find us on social media like everyone else. So you can find us on Blue Sky, you can find us on Twitter, you can find us on TikTok and on Instagram. Look for environmentaldefense.ca and or just Environmental Defense, depending on what you're on, and you can find us there.
All right, Tim Gray, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
That was my interview with Tim Gray. Thanks again, Tim, for taking the time to speak with me. Switching gears now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories this week on Rabble.ca. Let's jump right in. Starting this week with national news, the race to pick the next leader of the federal NDP is beginning to take shape. The NDP Federal Council has announced the rules and dates for the race to pick a new leader. The official campaign season will begin on September 2nd and will run until the NDP's national convention on March 29, 2026. There will be a candidate forum in October and two debates, one in November and one in February 2026. The Federal Council set an entry fee for candidates at $100,000, which is significantly higher than the $30,000 required for candidates in the last leadership race in 2017. In a statement to Rabble, an NDP spokesperson said that this high bar was set to prove a candidate's ability to raise funds. The party has also placed significant restrictions on third parties from participating in the campaign. Third parties can include volunteers or nonprofit organizations not directly involved with any candidate's campaign. These restrictions were put in place, the party says, after significant instances of foreign interference in other recent leadership contests held by some of the other major federal parties. Already, there are a couple of candidates in the race, one of whom is Montreal-based activist Eve Engler. Engler, who has received the endorsement of the NDP Socialist Caucus, said that he is well-placed to advocate for key issues in this leadership race, particularly rising global militarism and the ongoing genocide in Gaza. In an interview with Rabble.ca, Engler said that the NDP continues to fail to act boldly on the issue of Gaza, something he feels cost the NDP in the last election, saying, quote, "I think that they did a very poor job on an issue I know well. They did a bad job on tapping into some of the energy that was unleashed with the genocide in Gaza. There are a lot of young activists, a lot of young people of color who are still pushing on this issue," end quote. The NDP was reduced to just 7 seats in the House of Commons this past election, which led to the resignation of former leader Jagmeet Singh. In labor news, unions representing federal employees warn that Prime Minister Mark Carney's cuts to the civil service will mean a loss of more than 50,000 jobs and a reduction in the delivery of many federal programs that everyday Canadians rely on. Carney has announced that his government has an intention to cut federal spending by 7.5% next fiscal year, 10% the year after that, and 15% the year after that. The Public Service Alliance of Canada, which is a union representing thousands of federal employees, said that these cuts will put jobs and services at risk. Union National President Sharon D'Souza says these cuts are a breach of public trust, saying, quote, "Prime Minister Carney has a choice. Work alongside workers to strengthen public services and protect good jobs, or continue down a path of deep cuts that will hurt workers, hollow out services, and break public trust. End quote. In other news, Lush Cosmetics has launched a new bath bomb in partnership with the Canadian Council for Refugees. The Resilient Bath Bomb has a fragrance that is a mix of orange, grapefruit, and vanilla with a purple-green swirl for color. On sale since earlier in July, 75% of the sale price of the bath bomb minus taxes will go to the Canadian Council for Refugees, which will use the funding to help promote causes and programs aimed at helping migrants and reducing prejudice. A recent report by the Broadbent Institute found the Canadians' attitudes towards migrants and refugees was at an all-time low, with only 45% of Canadians surveyed having a positive view of immigration, while only 35% felt that Canadians should accept as many refugees as possible amid current global crises. Also this week, a report on Rabble.ca explains how Canadian embassy staff often fail to uphold the rights of local activists in their host countries, particularly when those activists are protesting the exploitation of their local resources by Canadian corporations. Canadian and international law states that embassy staff should try to support human rights defenders who seek their help if they are at risk of violence, state-sponsored or otherwise. In 2009, Mexican activist Mariana Abraca was the leader of a group protesting against Blackfire Exploration, a Canadian mining company exploiting resources in the town of Chicamucelo, Mexico. Abarca and his supporters contacted the Canadian embassy in Mexico, stating that they were subjected to harassment and violence by gangs allegedly acting on behalf of Blackfire. The embassy did not respond to Barca's concerns, and he was found dead later that year. Mary Lawler, UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders, visited Canada last year and said that the country needed to do a better job of protecting human rights defenders who protest against Canadian companies overseas. In Alberta politics, Alberta Premier Danielle Smith is attacking the province's Chief Electoral Officer Gordon McClure after McClure asked federal courts to decide if a referendum question on Alberta separation violated the Constitution of Canada. Premier Smith said that the courts and the Chief Electoral Officer must allow Albertans to vote on the question of separation, and that the will of the people should not be blocked by so-called red tape. That being said, a poll taken this past spring found that only 25% of Albertans felt that the province would be better off separating from Canada. Finally, a word from a rabble-rouser to watch, Patrick Corvin from No Hate in Huron.
Hi, I'm Patrick Corvin with No Hate in Huron. We emerged as an association dedicated to the resistance of hate activity following the appearance of organized hate activity and hate propaganda in our small rural community of Huron County in August of 2024. We're so honored to be nominated a Rabble Rouser to Watch and invite you to read more about our work in our interview at rabble.ca.
Thanks, Patrick. For this and more, visit rabble.ca. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider to subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Nick Seabrook, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.